on this wonderful afternoon. I really appreciate your choice. I would like to share some ideas with you that I've had when I was working for the German Institute for Japanese Studies in Tokyo. We had a research project on demographic change in Japan, and being a German institute, we here and there try to do some comparative approaches to the problem. And I try to look at the at low fertility and the aging of society and at family policy from two or three perspectives that I would like to present tonight, and I'm happy for any suggestion in terms of what to change and improve. Before I start, thank you very much, Martin Seeler-Kaiser, for taking the time to be discussant tonight. And a second point that I would like to mention before, if I construct any strange English sentences or use strange words, please feel free to laugh. I'd be happy if I could at least make you laugh. Then when I was invited, I was really happy, and I immediately agreed and told Katja what I could offer. But then when she told me that I would have to talk for 50 to 60 minutes, I felt sorry for all of you. And so I have tried to keep my PowerPoint presentation a bit colorful, maybe a bit more than is normal, and maybe some of you who are interested in manga may find this interesting, but I hope I haven't overdone it. So this seminar here, of which I'm part today, is about social factors and demographic trends. And when I prepared this talk, I wasn't sure what you already learned over the course of the last few weeks. I checked it. You learned something about marriage in Japan. Mary Brenton talked about women's labor and Japan's lowest low fertility. You spoke about the plight of Japanese men who can't find any wives anymore. Not all of them, obviously. low income men mostly affected. And last week, Leonard Schopper talked about how to diagnose and cure low fertility. Yamaguchi Kazuo, as far as I can see, was the only one who presented a comparative piece on South Korea and Japan, determinants of low marital fertility. And I would like to add a comparative piece to this series by looking at Japan and Germany, even though my focus will be a little bit more on Japan than on Germany. There are several reasons why I choose to compare these two countries, and here is an important one. You've probably seen this graph. You also probably know that scholars measure fertility by the total fertility rate, which equals the average number of children born to women over their lifetimes. And you probably know that a population needs to have a TFR of about 2.1 to sustain the population level. Here you can see the total fertility rates for three countries, of course, the United Kingdom. I thought this may be an interesting point of comparison. But also Japan, which is the red curve, and Germany, which is represented by the blue curve. And you can see that since 1998, total fertility rates in Japan and Germany have been very similar. What is also similar is the kind of consequences low fertility and the resulting aging of society can bring. Here are some of them to remind you. This is a very interesting graph, I think. It's from Peter MacDonald. If the year zero has 100% parent population and then a fertility rate of 1.3, you would have around 60 to 63% of that number as children. And then if you go from one generation to the next, you see that the number of parents and the number of children consequently is reduced to a little over 20% in the year 90. I think this is a very good way of illustrating what low fertility can mean. We could expect a fall in future labor force, aging and shrinking population. decrease in tax revenue, which is difficult in terms of how social security systems work. Many academics also assume that there will be a decrease in innovation and assimilation of new technologies. The young people who try the new stuff, and if there are fewer young people, then there will be not enough assimilation of new technology. It's a lack of economic and social dynamism, and also there has been a number of publications about a low fertility trap, meaning that once a country falls below the 1.5 level, that it will be very hard to reverse the trend and ever get back. That's among others by Lutz, who published a couple of pieces on this idea of low fertility trap. Given these serious consequences, I think you don't have to be very politically interested to ask the question, what do governments do about it? And this brings us to another reason why comparing Germany and Japan may be an interesting endeavor. Both countries, during the 1930s and until 1945, used population policies and passed measures directly targeted at raising fertility. For many decades thereafter, population policy therefore was off limits in both countries. On the contrary, in Japan, for example, the government tried to raise fertility slightly after the war. In the 1990s, this changed in Japan. About 10 years later, Germany followed, and population policy was not taboo anymore. And accordingly, governments in both countries have tried a number of different approaches over the last decades that were also, but often not exclusively, designed to affect birth rates. These approaches included policies aimed at supporting families, achieving gender equality, or work-life balance. Interestingly, by now, both countries have replaced their focus on low fertility with other policies. Let's look at Germany first, and this is based on your paper from 2011. You wrote back then, the family policy legacy of Germany is essentially the story of a strong male breadwinner, female caregiver regime, to which progressive modifications are gradually made from the 1980s onwards, after which paradigmatic changes unfold in the 2000s, end of quote. So in the 1980s, there are family-oriented benefits introduced into the pension system in Germany. We have the entitlement to unpaid parental leave. We have the expansion of a flat parental benefit of 2 years after the birth of a child, and parents are guaranteed to be able to return to their position after parental leave and get about the same salary that they received before. So family responsibilities were socialized. There was more support for families. The next idea was to increase parental choice. And for conservatives, this basically meant more benefits, but for social democrats, that was an expansion of childcare. So back then, the right for every child between the ages of 3 and 6 to a place in a childcare facility was passed by the German Bundestag. In 2000, a new term was created. This time it's the sustainable family policy. Family ministry had a group of experts sit together and think about what could be done. And I think you in your paper quote someone from the ministry saying that the only criteria according to which the success of these policies was measured was if the fertility rate would go up or not. that was the only, the major focus of the mass media and the public. So this was, this sustainable family policy was aimed at a higher total fertility rate, at work-life balance, at employment of both parents to avoid poverty. It was aimed at early childhood education and child rearing. And about 10 years ago, the Confederation of German Employers Association also joined the government's campaign. And they feared the consequences of a shrinking labor force, and especially a lack of skilled employees. Consequently, families were now also framed as an important economic factor. The result was an employment-oriented strategy. The policy goals were higher fertility rate and higher maternal employment. This is taken from a very recent publication from the Ministry of Family Affairs. And this is now, it's not only the Sustainable Family Policy, now it also is called the Modern and Sustainable Family Policy. So we do make progress. Very, very modern. This is what you see here is the essence of what is called a momentous change. Momentous change in family policy. So economic stability, equal opportunity, and freedom of choice, they all go together to increase the quality of life and children's well-being, and that will hopefully result in a higher fertility rate. That's the idea. And I have three quotes from this publication. The first one, economic stability in all phases of life is a crucial prerequisite for quality of life. Okay, who would say that's not true? Okay, so that's number one. Number two, equal opportunity. That doesn't only include gender equality, but also that no matter which family background a child has, no matter where the parents come from, that these children all have the same opportunity, and also the various forms of families that you can find in modern societies, patchwork families, single moms and dads, same-sex families, etc. And the final point, freedom of choice, the publication says, regarding freedom of choice, all structural impediments must be eliminated. Total free choice is the goal of the policy here. What about Japan? Here again, we have the idea of a male breadwinner and female caregiver, which is dominant, and we have the ever-ruling Liberal Democratic Party, which favored the idea of the Japanese style of welfare society, which in its core, I think, meant first of all, women do all the caregiving, parents-in-law, their own parents, and the children. Then came the 1.57 shock. May I just ask who's familiar with the 1.57 shock? Because then I'm not going to repeat. Okay, if the others are not, you can see it here. Oops, here on the graph. It's right here. It's in 1966. And this is the total number of births. And you can see that in 1965 it was high. And in 1967 it was even higher. But here in 1966 it was about 460,000 lower than in the year before. And the idea is that it's the year of the fire horse. And superstition says that women born in the year 1966 would be very difficult wives, maybe even lethal to their husbands. So I did some digging and tried to find out where this comes from. I think it goes back to the 17th century, but that's a different story. So we have this this 1.7 total fertility rate, and then in the year after that, you can really see that the parents held their breath. And then in 1967, most of the children that were otherwise born, should have been born in 1996, were born a year later. So the fertility rate rebounded. So keeping that in mind, if you look at 1989 on this graph, which is the green column in the middle, that's the 1.57 fertility rate in 1989, and that came as a shock. Now, a shock, I think, is something you don't expect to happen, but if you look at this graph, this is not really a surprise. If you had paid any attention to how fertility rate was developing, then you would have expected that one day the total fertility rate will be lower than in the year of the fire horse, and that happened in 1989. So in 1990, when these data were published, the political system and the government started to take note. So it's really nice. It's a clear-cut date. We can say from 1990 on, this year marked the time in which Japanese government started to take notice of the problem. Since 1994, there have been more than 20 distinct government-run campaigns and initiatives presenting a comprehensive set of approaches to the problem. Studies that direct their attention exclusively towards these policies often suggest that the Japanese government has been quite active in fighting low fertility. But when you look at it more closely, I think it becomes obvious that in spite of the colorful white books and the brochures you would get, the long list of policy approaches and the occasional media attention, low fertility has actually been sidelined on the policy agenda of most governments for the last 25 years. Before I explain what I mean, let me first introduce to you the major approaches. And this is just a selection. So on the left, you see the Japanese version. On the right is my attempt to translate it. You have the Angel Plan and then the New Angel Plan. And this was explicitly called Measures Against Low Fertility. Then in 2003, we have the law to promote measures to support the rearing of the next generation. I don't know about British names of laws, but if you translate Japanese laws into German, they always sound very long and a little difficult to understand what they are all about, but they're definitely comprehensive in what they try to say. Then in 2004 and 5 and up to 2009, we had a basic law for measures against a society with declining birth rates, and we had the plan to support children and child rearing. 2007 saw a strategy of major points, a Japan that supports children and families. In 2009, a new minister in charge of low fertility took office. Her name was Obuchi. She's one of the daughters of a former prime minister, Obuchi. And she apparently was very dissatisfied with everything that had been done so far. So she called her initiative Zero Kara Kangaeru Sōsuka Taisaku Project. So they start from scratch. Okay, it's rethinking measures against low fertility from zero. Project. Then in 2010 to 2014, we had the vision on child and child rearing and follow up to the vision on child and child rearing. And all of these initiatives tried different approaches and tried to mix them in a new mix. And in 2014, so very new, very fresh, we have the new system to support children and child rearing. This is the first campaign that officially ended the emphasis on low fertility. Hardly appears in any of the publications now. And by the way, since 2003, the Japanese government published a yearly white book on low fertility. They stopped in 2012. There is no more white book on low fertility. So, the latest approach in Japan. This is from one of the many brochures you can find on the topic, and I'm trying to translate some of what you can see here. What is important about this idea is that although the LDP, the Liberal Democratic Party, pushes this initiative, it was actually an idea of the Democratic Party of Japan, the party that ruled from 2009 to 2012, or should I say, tried to govern anyway. It was there. And so they came up with this idea, and the LDP, all the LDP did was they added this new logo mark on the right, Sukusuku Japan. Sukusuku means something like quickly growing Japan. It's a nice idea for a fertility initiative, Sukusuku Japan. So we strive, very, very typical prose of Japanese government publications. We try to solve the issues surrounding childbearing, and obviously there are three major problems. You can see here, number one is a growing demand for high quality school education and childcare. Number two is we do have aging of society, we do have a trend towards nuclear families, and we do have thinning human relations in the regions. So the ability to raise children is declining. And when I say region, this is the Japanese term, chiho. I'm not quite sure if there is a nicer translation for that. So anyway, there it is. And number three is, particularly in urban regions, there are waiting lists for nurseries, and in the rural areas, nurseries disappear because of the decrease in the number of children. So these are the three major problems the government has identified. And this system is supposed to start this year. This is another page from the brochure. And you see, we will provide comprehensive high-quality school education and childcare. And on the left, we will increase the number of places for consultation and temporary childcare. And we will improve the conditions for child-rearing in rural areas or neighborhoods even more. So that's the idea. Oh, there is one more. Okay, in order to avoid waiting lists, we will increase the number of children to be accepted by each nursery. So we just lower the standards so that every kid can get a place. And we will support nurseries in rural areas. Okay, as you can see, low fertility has mostly disappeared from the campaigns. And the new focus is on childcare and education. The focus on measures to support families economically through benefits has disappeared. There are no measures to improve gender equality. Okay? The small print is to remind you of what the German idea is: economic stability, equal opportunity, and freedom of choice. And in the little boxes, that's the Japanese idea: institutional childcare, high quality education, and informal childcare. And this picture down here, I took that one in a train. It's a bit tricky, a little difficult to see, but you have a family with a child down here, father, mother. A father is carrying the grocery bag. And here, I don't know, this is just the ghost image or a shadow, or just the outline of different kinds of people who are already we're all prepared to help the family. So everyone in society is supposed to support families. Ureishi ne, machi ippai no, I can oyakokoro. I remember listening to a presentation by Minister Obuchi, and that was shortly after she had become a mother herself, and she said if she pushes a baby car, which probably didn't happen very often, but if when she pushes a baby car through the streets, she's always very happy when someone comes up to her and says, "Well, your child is really cute. Kawaii desu ne." And she said to the audience, if you want to do something good, If you want to support mothers, why don't you stop them sometimes and say your kid is really cute? That was her idea. So the Japanese concept is to create a better environment for child rearing, and the idea is to keep women in the labor market. And I don't know where that leaves fertility, but for the moment, just let us leave it at that. So what do governments in both countries spend on families? I think this is a very important question. You can talk a lot about it, but not invest a lot of money into it. Unfortunately, there are not very, very recent numbers. It always takes a while. There's always a little slag in getting the numbers out. So Japan, the second column from the left in 2011, and the gray part on the bottom is senior citizens. And this is social expenditure's share of GDP in international comparison. And in Japan, that's about 11% for senior citizens, and 1.3% for families. And Germany, which is the third column from the right, is about 9% for senior citizens and 2.1% for families. This is if you take the whole of social expenditure and then look at who's getting how much, then in Japan, senior citizens get close to 50% and families 4.27. And in Germany, senior citizens get around 31-32% and families get 7.27%. That's the numbers in the corners. So Germany spends more on families and less on senior citizens, according to these data. If we look, you may suggest, well, maybe there are many more senior citizens in Japan than in Germany, but the share is almost the same. It's 23% if you count the 65 and older part of the population. In Japan, it's around 30 million. 23%, and in Germany it's about 17 million, which is 21%. Okay, what do families get? In Germany, we have child allowance since 1936, and then established in 1954. We have the Education Assistance Act that gives students and pupils with low-income families the chance to get money to study at university and at schools. There's an entitlement to unpaid parental leave since 1986. I talked about the guarantee to reemploy parents after parental leave. Child care facilities, guarantee for that, for children between 3 and 6 years, all children since last year. We have earnings related benefit, that's 67% of earnings for a maximum of 12% plus 2 months if the other parent also takes some time off to care for their children. And we have a child care subsidy since this year, which is highly controversial, but still there it is. In Japan, child allowance started in 1972, and that was, at least if we believe the representatives of Kōmeitō, the Clean Government Party, that was their idea. We have student loans, mostly for very good students. We have entitlement to unpaid parental leave since 1991. There is no guarantee to reemploy parents after parental leave at the same position and the same salary. There is no guarantee for child care facilities. There is no earnings related benefit, and there is no child care subsidy. Plus, education is usually more expensive in Japan than in Germany. So what can explain the difference? Oh, by the way, I forgot to give you one number. A child allowance over a year in Japan, not means tested, is about 156,000 yen, which is around £900. And in Germany, it's twice as much. It's 1,800. Sorry? Yeah. And you even get it for the third child, you get more, and I think for the fifth, you get even more.
And if you're poor, you don't.
Oh, okay. Poor. Okay, then, yeah. So, what can explain the difference? Of course, there are social, historical, economic factors, but I would like to use these three approaches to see what we can find. First, I would like to use the idea of a political arena of low fertility. The idea is that all actors interested in a certain policy field would gather there and fight for their ideas and push their policies. And the second idea is that you need a policy sponsor, someone who takes care and who puts a lot of energy and time and influence into a certain goal. And the third idea is policy marketplace. This is really colorful, and I will explain later what I mean with policy marketplace. So let's begin with a look into the political arena of low fertility in Germany. And these are all the actors you can find there. It's a lot. It's a lot. I don't know if there are a lot of actors because there's a lot of money in there, or it's the other way around, because there are a lot of actors, there's a lot of money involved. I don't know. So you have the conservative and the progressive parties, you have the employers, the labor unions, the federal ministries, you have the federal states, the local authorities, parliament, and the committees within parliament. You have family organization, churches, welfare associations, you have political foundations. You have the Constitutional Court in Germany and the European Union. Okay, so keep that in mind before we switch to Japan. So, this is Japan. Within the government, you have the Cabinet Office and the Ministry of Health, Labour and Welfare. Also the Parliament, the Conservative and the Progressive Parties, the municipalities, the employers, and some non-profit organizations. In other words, there are no welfare associations to speak of. There are no churches. There are no family organizations with political influence, and there are no foundations. Labor unions are much weaker than in Germany, and there is no equivalent to the European Union. And as you may know, the Constitutional Court, the Supreme Court in Japan, is not at all trying to get involved in politics. In Germany over the last 6 years, I think we had over 100 changes to the Constitution because people went to the Constitutional Court and said something's not right with the law. So if Parliament passed a law, and then there were over 100 incidents in which the Constitutional Court said this law is not okay with the Constitution. In Japan, so far, we've had 7 or 8. And most of these were dealing with the imbalance of votes between electoral districts. So in Japan, the Constitutional Court is definitely not active in this field. What is also important is that there are no tribe politicians, no zokugin. Rebana described tribe politicians as the spearhead of pressure group politics. So while there are many in other policy fields, fertility attracted almost none. And without them, the policy field lacked an important political driving force. And there's further evidence of the comparatively little attention low fertility was given. For example, over the 10-year period of the first coalition of LDP and Komeitor from 1999 to 2009, only one prime minister, Koizumi, for a very short period, became engaged in the policy field. The other 5 prime ministers never mentioned it. Neither when they were running for leadership of their party, nor did they declare it a central policy issue of their administration. And I think among social scientists and demographers, there is hardly anyone who thinks that Japanese pronatal policies have been successful. I think you will have a hard time looking for a publication that claims that. Let's take a closer look at who is active in this political arena. This is, I think, a very impressive collection of politicians. 17 ministers in charge of low fertility over the last 10 or 11 years. The first row, 7 women, all of them liberal Democrats. And you can see 1 year, 13 months, 11, 11, 11, 2, and 1, 2 months and 1 year. The last one is Mrs. Obuchi I just talked about. So that was from 2003 to 2009. Then the second row shows 9 ministers during 3 years of DPJ rule. 9 ministers in the same position in 3 years. You use some of them only for a month. No, one of them. 2 months. And to be fair, the woman on the left here, she's not from the DPJ. She's from the Social Democrats. I don't know if they still exist at this very moment. They do. Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to be impolite. With 9 ministers in 3 years, this period looks a bit like a disaster, frankly. But all of what the LDP is doing today in this policy field is still a result of the DPJ's period in government. I'll come to that later. The present minister in charge of low fertility is a woman called Mori Masako. She's from the prefecture of Kusima. And she's been elected twice to the upper house, and for a male liberal Democrat, that would by no means be sufficient to become a member of the cabinet. But she's from Fukushima. She belongs to the camp of Prime Minister Abe, who also put her in charge of the very controversial specified secrets protection law that was passed last year. On the side, she was very much in favor of nuclear power until 3 years ago, and then she turned around and said that her party was very guilty. The LDP was very guilty of what it did to the people in the Tohoku region. But she has been in office longer than any of her predecessors. So next to the high fluctuation in the office, it is important to know that the women of the LDP were all inexperienced and equipped with very little political influence. All reached the pinnacle of their political career as ministers in charge of low fertility. After that, they never, the career never went further north. So when looking at who is actively involved in this political arena, we find politicians who are low in party hierarchy, young, inexperienced, little power, dependent on others in the party, and they are good at policy, but they are not good at politics. So they know a lot about it. Particular field, but they don't know how to use their elbows and get ideas through within their party. Let's take a look now at the lower and upper house committees for health, labor, and welfare, because that is where the issues of low fertility should be discussed. And if you accept that the number of re-elections to parliament is an indicator of political influence, this message is also very clear. What we did here was we did this in January 2010, but we could have picked any other point in time, I guess. We looked at who is member of a particular committee: the Budget Committee, Infrastructure and Transport, Agriculture and Fisheries, and Health, Labor and Welfare. And then we looked at the Liberal Democrats and checked how many elections they had won. If you're a freshman or a freshwoman, you only win one election, you're very low in the party hierarchy. If you win two, you're a little further up. You can see that on average, the number in the Health, Labor, and Welfare Committee is 2.07. 16 of the 28 Liberal Democrats had only won one election. It was their first time in Parliament. Okay, If you look at the budget committee, you can see that all the big shots of the LDP are in there. Okay, so the influential people who can move things, who can push ideas, they're in the budget committee, but they're not in the health, labor, and welfare committee. One politician said that in an interview, he told me, I don't want to be member of the health, labor, and welfare committee because I have to be the messenger of too many bad news about pension systems, and health insurance, and long-term care insurance. I don't want to do that. Let the young people do that. Okay. So, I think this is additional evidence that fertility and family policy are not high on the agenda of the Liberal Democratic Party. These are 14 people that I interviewed, and my idea was, what about motivation? Are these people motivated to be active in the policy arena? And this, I try to make this really short because we don't have the time for that. I was looking for intrinsic motivation. Are these people motivated? And the interviews I conducted showed if you're intrinsically motivated, you have to meet three criteria. The first one is you need to have a sense of autonomy, self-determination. You do this by your own free will. Number two is that you need to have a sense of accomplishment. You have to have the idea, I can really change something. And the third criterion is that you have to be related to the problem. Okay? So all of these people have children. I picked these people because they have children and they were all members of this committee. And what I found is that they're not intrinsically motivated. Their attitudes show that they think the effects of the policies are doubtful. Even if we come up with a good idea, we don't know if it really works. They all have their own very personal view of how families work. Of course, everyone with kids has a family, so they all have their personal ideas, and not many of them really read surveys or results of academic research. One LDP politician said that Japanese young men are not manly enough anymore. They don't have the guts to support a family. Others said what we need to do is have cheaper housing, but that's impossible in Tokyo, so there's nothing can be done. They also think that you need a lot of money to change something, which is impossible. And because their wives take care of the kids, and the kids and the wife live together with one parent, grandparent-in-law, or grandparent. So their personal attachment to the situation of many young Japanese people is very thin. Of course, this group, this sample group, was very small. It was just to test the idea if motivation would also work as evidence for how what shape Japanese pronatal policies and family policies have taken. Okay. This year, this is the manga part that I told you about. This is the second approach. This is the policy sponsor. Okay, this is my image of a policy sponsor. John Campbell in the early 1990s did some research on policy change, and he said, the closer we approach particularity, the more people seem to matter. People as individuals, the goals, personality, and the drive of a given bureaucrat or politician when it comes to policy change. And sponsorship is a critical explanatory factor. The presence or absence of an effective sponsor, one with sufficient skills, resources, and drive to take charge of the process. It is the single most important variable in determining whether and when policy change will occur. Okay. I give you an example. This is a policy sponsor, Arimura Haruko. And if you ever saw these onaka ni akachan ga imasu, I think that's what it says here, right? So I have a baby in my belly. That's her idea. She used to work for McDonald's before she became a politician. Not at the counter. She was somewhere in administration. and when she was pregnant, she had to board the trains every morning. You all know that's not a very pleasant experience, especially not if you're pregnant. So she wished to have something that would tell the other people I'm pregnant, so that they would offer her a seat and not be so pushy. So she, when she turned politician, she came up with the idea, why don't we have these little badges attached to women's handbags or wherever, so that people see, okay, this woman is pregnant, and I offer her my seat. So the ministry ran a one-year campaign to find the logo mark to print on this batch, and then they had it. So she's a policy sponsor. She had this idea, she pushed it, and then in the end it became reality. So that's a very simple, small example of a policy sponsor. If we look at the arena of low fertility, there was Koizumi and Inoguchi. She was minister in charge. I think she was number 5 or 6 or 4. So these two were in there for a while, and Koizumi even established a new committee to discuss low fertility, and he asked 3 former prime ministers to be members to give it some importance. And then this committee met about 2 or 3 times, and they had this little declaration of what they wanted to achieve, and then they just let it fall asleep, and they never met again, and it simply disappeared. So he sort of walked through the policy arena. I told you it's going to be colorful. This is the third and final idea. This is the policy marketplace. Just imagine that that politicians pick policy fields they want to be active in. Okay? So they walk into, the analogy is allowed, they walk into a policy marketplace and they see different products they can pick from. Your long-term care, health, pension, budgets, small and medium-sized enterprises, the United States of America, the car industry, the farmers. Up there in the right corner is low fertility. And as in a marketplace, there are popular products and there are less popular products. So if we take this perspective, it may help us to understand why there are many people in some political arenas and only a few in others. And according to what I learned from politicians, here are the criteria that decide which products, which policy fields politicians in Japan choose from. It's important that it has an effect on chances of re-election. Okay? It's important the characteristics of the electoral district. Is it rural or urban, etc.? It's got to be some fashion. Maybe there's a fashionable political topic. It's got to be attractive to voters. It's got to have a good effect on inner party career. Then it's always good to fit with some personal characteristics. If you're a lawyer or a doctor and you're trained politician, then maybe you want to do something that falls in that particular field, or your qualification or your career. Then, of course, personal networks are important. And of course, there are always external pressures. If something happens, then it may be necessary to change or temporarily change your choice in the policy marketplace. Now, if we look at what qualities or what features low fertility has as a product, we can see this. It does not attract voters. Many politicians told me, hyo ni naranai, sousuka taisaku, hyo ni naranai. You don't win elections with that, okay? And there is no clearly defined or even organized target group. It's not like the doctors or the lawyers or the car industry. The causes for low fertility are very complex, and there is no easy fix. The problem grows slowly. There is no immediate threat. Okay? You may see that the playground is turned into a park for senior citizens around the corner, but still, it's a very slow change that happens in society. And policies are expensive, hard to enforce, and they do not have a clear cause-effect link. And at this point, it's important to understand that German politicians work differently. There's a different kind of entrepreneurship in Germany, and that's because voter behavior is different in Germany. There is more an orientation towards who will be chancellor and which party people vote for. As a politician, it's the party list that is important for you. The electoral system is different. And it's important to work with the party branch in your district. And within the party, there is no clear hierarchy between single member districts and party lists. You see what I mean by that in a minute. And there are very few politicians who change parties. In Japan, voter behavior is slightly different. You have more of an orientation towards candidates, individuals, and the party. Prime ministers, as we know, change. If you vote for someone to become prime minister, you don't know if he's still in office in a year from now. You don't have so much party branches, even though they are called party branches, but the personal support organization is very important. And you can take that with you if you leave the party. And then people who win single member districts usually are considered to be more politically more influential than those who get into parliament via the party list. Hashimoto Ryutaro, former prime minister, he made fun of politicians who only joined parliament because they won, they entered parliament over the party list. He would only accept as equals those who won their single member districts. And changing of parties happens in comparison to Germany quite frequently, and it's easy in comparison. So, summing up the case of Japan, there are a small number of actors in the political arena, mostly unexperienced and powerless politicians. There's a frequent change of ministers in charge, very few policy sponsors. Low fertility is a low seller in the policy marketplace. And now enter the DPJ. It's 2009 September, and the DPJ wins a landslide victory. And one of the promises was, here, this is from their election program, a lot more money. We want to raise child allowance to 26,000 yen per month. That was more than double the amount. And the story behind this one is that the mastermind behind the election campaign, Ozawa Ichiro, he simply promised that and ignored all the people in his party who wanted to do something else with the money. They wanted to improve childcare. But he took the money and said, now we can just throw it at the people and give 26,000 yen per month as child allowance. Okay, so that was part of the election promise. And this is, in a nutshell, the 3 years of DPJ government. And the row below, you're familiar with that one. These are the ministers in charge of low fertility. We had Hatoyama Yukio as prime minister, and the media were very keen about his promise to relocate the American forces from Okinawa. Then we had Kan Naoto, Hatoyama also had there was a financial scandal. His mother had donated money and he didn't know about it, and his secretary made it look like deceased people had donated the money, but that's a bit of a different story. So Kan Naoto came next. There was 311 Fukushima reconstruction, and then he was pushed out of office, and the next prime minister was Noda. Noda, Prime Minister Noda, when he took over, the focus shifted. Now it was a battle between Noda, who wanted to raise the consumption tax, and the LDP Komeito opposition. They wanted nothing more than new elections because they figured they could win. But the consumption tax is important because it is related to fertility. We're almost done. Gambatte. So financing an aging society. If you look at this, you see what the problem is. This is in 1990. The increase in expenditure for social security systems and financing, deficit financing through government bonds went up threefold. This is the amount spent that had to be spent, and this is the money that had to be deficit financed. So this went up threefold, this sixfold. And down here you see how much of the costs can be covered by insurance premium, and this is what had to be covered by tax. New debt. And just to give you an idea, they talk about cho, icho. This is 1 billion yen every year. This gap got bigger by 1 billion yen. Is it trillion? Okay. I get confused with American.
It's
trillion. It's the German billion, but it's the English trillion.
But what about the American? Is the American?
It's the same as the American.
What about? I'm sorry. A milliarden is milliard.
No, that's billion. Milliard is billion.
Yes.
Then I have to buy a new dictionary. Sorry. No, my fault. It's not the dictionary's fault. It's my fault. Okay. So, I'm sorry. So it's got to be a trillion. I'm sorry. Even Komeito, the party that always fought an increase in consumption tax, they were happy to agree if they could get new elections. So given this situation, it was obvious. Experts had always said we need the increase. So what's going to happen with the money? And up till now, there have always been the big three of social policy. It's a pension system, health insurance, and long-term care. And now the government says, this is still the DPJ's idea from 2012, we will use part of that money for child rearing. $0.7 trillion yen. That's what it says here. Why? The answer. Sorry, the answer is simple. The labor force is shrinking. There are fewer and fewer young people, and compared to Germany, and probably every other industrialized country, there is very little immigration into Japan. Very little immigration. There are not many young foreigners settling in Japan and joining the workforce. So Japan's economy needs women. And Japan's Business Federation began pushing policies that allow mothers to remain in the labor force. And we all know that the Liberal Democrats are very business-friendly. So here is what Keidanren, the Business Federation, says. We need more public money for institutional childcare, maintaining childcare services through private initiatives, and financial subsidies for childcare institutions of private companies. This is a quote. Keidanren believes that in order to achieve sustainable development for Japan's economy, it is even more important to make use of women's strengths and power. Keidanren therefore makes every effort to promote and support the great efforts and activities of women. It's very obvious what the motivation is here. So this is how the political arena looks like now. And this is a bit anime for you. There are more and more sponsors coming in. And there is the Prime Minister who's riding through the political arena. And he bears the flag of the Keidanren. So this is important. However, priorities haven't changed that much, because if you read the fine print, then you can see while the big three of social policy, April 1st, the consumption tax will be increased from 5% to 8%. And then in October next year, if the economic situation allows, it will be raised from 8 to 10%. So two steps. And the three big policy fields and the three, Nenki, Nidi, or Kaigo, the pension, health insurance, and long-term care insurance, they will get the money from the first raise. And from the second raise, that revenue is meant for childcare. And remember that this second raise will only come if the economic situation is favorable. If that will happen, I don't know. So, let me summarize. Japan and Germany have the same total fertility rate. Both countries have tried a number of approaches over the years. Germany spends much more money on families. You may ask if that's a good policy, if we spend so much more money and achieve the same result. But that's a different topic. Many more influential actors in the German political arena than in Japan. Family policy attracts many more policy sponsors in Germany. And in Germany, family policy tries to do a lot of things at the same time. It's gender equality and freedom of choice, and Japan's focus is on childcare. And economic aspects important in both countries. So if you look at the policy market now, and this is the final thing I'm going to say now, is maybe Japan's politicians will need to go shopping again, and this time pick up the special bargain up there, which is immigration. But that's a completely different topic. Thank you for staying awake and staying with me. Arigatou gozaimasu.